This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Greg Norris, my oldest son. Greg has really taken over the buy-sell business for the last 12 years and got involved in big project and so forth. So, Greg, welcome to our show.
Glad to be here.
What was your background before the real estate stuff for our company?
I had started out in fire alarm sales, did that for a couple of years, went into building a spec home, which I built one with the man that taught me, and then I built one with you, and then we kind of pulled away from that when the crash occurred in 1990.
Yeah.
And after that, I spent about 12 years doing electrical work.
I hadn't thought about that story, but you're probably 18 or 19 years old. I remember you came to the door of our home. You had a set of plans I gave you a set of plans. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't want to see you until we have a house.
Right.
And you did it.
Yeah, you've always had a lot more faith in me than I've had in myself.
Well, you have retention of that type of thing like I've never seen.
Hmm.
You see something one time and it's like you can do it. When you were 2 years old, 3 years old, I had to go to work. I was trying to put your train or your car back together on a track. And was left in pieces. I said, I would have to get it later. Came back home, was on the track. I said, oh, Mom did it. And you went, no. So I just, oh, my gosh. So you, mechanically, it seems like you do retain things that you see. And that's literally all you did was you were the guy helping a guy that knew how to be a builder.
Yes. And I took extensive notes as I was, you know, going through the process with him. And
that's smart.
Yeah.
So
that's what I learned.
Yeah. I didn't know if you just visualize, you know. Remember, Mom used to do that stuff. We'd be on a vacation. She'd be in a car and go, oh, you know, you passed the thing 3 years ago. And they go, oh, they painted the silo blue.
Yeah. My memory's not so good for lots of other things. So why I remember this, I couldn't tell you. Maybe it helps actually being able to physically do it and see the outcome of it. I'm not sure.
Well, you know, part of that, I remember getting aggravated at you at the time because you didn't always go there every day. And I didn't realize that wasn't part of the deal. I understand it now, but then
right.
I thought you're supposed to work every day, go there, you know?
And there wasn't things to do every day.
Right, you're running people doing stuff. So yeah. that was part of being in general that I didn't understand. When you came, you did a lot of estimating, and you did a lot of running of pretty good-sized crews, too, in the electrical union.
Right.
So that really came into play when you... The first thing you did for us is you took over the Rosamond project.
Right.
So we had bought 93 building lots for next to nothing, but there was a lot of process to get to the building stage.
There was, yeah. Those were pretty rough lots that still needed some help to get to where they were really buildable. Some of them needed a lot.
Yeah, there was a lot of... That was a lot more than I thought. That was for sure. Just looking at the size of that project, though, I remember thinking the common areas alone were staggering. How much there was.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time you came there because we were doing the manufactured homes first.
Yeah.
And you were looking at the size of the crews and you were just said, Dad, you're never going to get it done.
Yeah, we're in trouble here.
Not enough
people. Isn't going to happen, yeah.
You're going to get about five of them done every half year.
Right.
And it turned out to be true. So that was, you know, that was the first thing when you came on board. And you had to compile all this stuff from scratch, not something you had ever done.
No, I had never done that before. I remember many times trying to talk you out of letting me do it. And I got the quotes for it, and you're like, no, I think you can do a better job. And I was like, are you sure? I certainly didn't feel like it, but, you know, it really pushed me, and I think I really grew as a general contractor at that point and really got to understand how to be a better project manager in a lot of ways and really understood all the intricacies of putting together a project from the very beginning to the very end. So it was a good growing experience.
That was a heck of a learning curve. I'm glad I delegated it, I can tell you that. I think if I hadn't had you get involved, I probably would have sold 90 building lots with three manufactured home models, made a little bit of money and called it a day.
Yeah.
So the first set of those that we did manufactured homes.
Yes.
And maybe 20 of them or more, as I recall.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Okay. That was a different process? It seemed like that was a struggle because maybe the contractor wasn't set up for volume. There was just something about the manufactured home, even though it showed up pretty much done. It seemed like the contractor struggled with getting all those other pieces. Maybe it was the quality of their labor. I don't remember.
You know, there are multiple factors. Yeah, I mean, manufactured homes, you know, we knew by the time we were done, we realized it didn't really cost that much less to put a manufactured home down over building a stick-built home. And the quality of the construction crews was much lower because, I mean, in general, people that are buying a manufactured home are going to spend as little as possible. So the market for expensive manufactured home
labor,
construction labor, is pretty low.
Right.
So, yeah, it was definitely a non-desirable process, and it didn't take us but, you know, the 30 or so houses I think we did that were manufactured homes to realize this is a mistake. We just need to go to stick built. Not to mention, I think we had a falling out with the contractor because it was going so poorly.
Yeah,
so.
It was taking a long time. Making that transition, though, wasn't easy because now we're in a completely different world, and you're basically putting together a quote for a house where before you're doing a garage.
Yeah, that was an interesting transition. I mean, that one scared me. I had no idea how long it was going to take to go from, you know, fortunately we had a little bit of time.
Right.
You know, we decided pretty early on, it's like, this is not going well, let's not do this anymore. And we, you know, were able to transition to the stick-built homes pretty quickly, and we were able to get that process going, you know, the plans and all the things that were going to need to be changed. And just
how did Raleigh come to be the contractor? Because it seemed like there was a few people prior to that that had a pretty different pricing, and we weren't real
right.
comfortable with that.
It was a friend, Gary Horn was the one who I went and talked to. I told him what I was up against. He was kind of a mentor on the commercial side for me of real estate, and he basically referred me to an insurance company that he thought would be able to do the wrap insurance, I think, or
yeah.
give us a competing quote. And I don't think we ended up using that company, oddly enough, for the insurance, but we did end up using a referral they gave us for the general contractor, which was Raleigh.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long did it take to go from the start to finish on the single family home? What was the time frame? Was it 4 or 5 months?
Oh, for just the project management side of the
no,
beginning of it?
Just a house. In other words, when he started, when would we have a house? What was the process?
A phase was 16 homes at a time we were doing, and it was typically taking a little over 4 months, 4.5 months, something like that.
Okay. We did that big of phases. I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did we have chunks of them be ready before the other one?
It was pretty much they were all going through the same thing at the same time. You know, obviously you stagger it so that you can have a little bit of time for the crews on the different homes, but we scheduled it so that they were going to be kicked out every 4.5 months and 16 at a time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember one of the things that happened, and you were really on top of that. We had hired salespeople, a sales company that sat the tract. Mm-hmm. And do we have models?
We had, yeah, three models.
Three models, okay. And I remember every time we had a different phase, you were pretty aggressive at telling them to bump the price.
Yeah, I remember we had hired a company to help us price, and I was like, nah, I don't think that's good enough. Let's try a little more. And fortunately, I happened to be right, but I just saw something in the market that just seemed like it was going up much more aggressively than the company we had hired was advising us to. So
that. Tony Alvarez lives in Lancaster, and when we first met, he had about 50 rentals he was about to sell, and I was dragging my feet to start Rosamond, only 9 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was looking at was the MLS, and I mean, everything was pending in 2 or 3 days when we started that project.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, okay, there's nothing that survives.
Right.
And that was when that happened, and we could get aggressive with the price increases. And I remember what the starting price was. I remember the ending was something in the 280s.
I think our highest one was almost 300,000.
Wow.
Yeah, that was the very top one with the view.
View.
the view
of all
desert.
The dirt. But I remember that at one point we had people camping overnight to get a shot at some of those homes.
Hmm.
That was in Rosamond. You got to be kidding me. That was the craziest housing market, man.
Right.
But yeah, we have you to thank for getting us through that because I mean, we went pending on that last phase and two of them fell out.
Mm-hmm.
and we auctioned them and got probably 70 grand less inside of 2 months.
Right.
I think Tony actually bought one time for 45 grand in a downturn.
I can't imagine that most of them weren't sold.
Oh, no. I mean, unless they were free and clear. I mean, and there was some exchanges done for that. But, yeah, that was just, we were very fortunate to have the timing, all that.
Yeah.
So we go through that, and then all of a sudden we get to this next part where there's just almost nothing that can work, which is, you know, when prices, I remember you were pretty meticulous about showing me where the prices were going. And I mean, they were dropping like 3% a month in Riverside.
Yeah, it was pretty absurd.
And you're sitting there going, okay, well, how long does it take us to fix it and all that? You're having to knock 15% off your retail price when you get there 4 months from
right,
now.
Right, yeah. I remember thinking it felt like at that particular time, probably almost at least a year before it even began to make sense, that I felt like my job was to say no.
Yeah. Well, it was really a good idea, actually. The one thing that we tried that I was sure that would work was the auction. That was the one thing that we kind of fit in between Rosamond and doing anything else. Mm. And I remember we thought we'd start an auction company because I knew big foreclosures coming and all that. And we worked our butts off and sold one house that was an as-is one.
Right.
I still to this day, I'm glad we didn't continue it because obviously that wasn't going to be our gig.
Right.
But I'm still baffled at how you could have, we had somebody making phone calls to confirm attendance, and we had over 200 people that said they were coming.
Well, you know, probably been fortuitous because that probably was mostly the fact that was at the very beginning of the downfall, and it's all of a sudden nobody was interested in real estate because it was so absurdly priced, and everyone started to realize, hey, it really is overpriced. Why are we buying this? So it started turning the other direction. I think we just poor timing for when we attempted to start it, but it probably worked out for the best.
I don't remember working harder for nothing. I remember, but I do remember saying something like this, as that, you know, we were all sort of just down because I could tell it wasn't going to work. You know, we got 13 houses and 28 people. It's not going to work.
Right.
But I thought, you know, I've never been more proud of an effort, man. Mm-hmm. We just knew it wasn't going to be what we continued with. So in a way that was good to know too.
Right.
So we get to the next phase of what you got involved in, and it was buying a trustee sales. And that had not been something that I had ever done because I always thought the margin was too tight. But what I didn't really realize until we started funding some loans for the guy that did it on a regular basis was he was buying far superior located properties. And so his margin didn't have to be as big.
Yes, the speed of the turnaround. Yeah, I mean, I remember doing some rehabs with you when I was young, and they were usually heavy rehabs that needed, you know, $40,000, $50,000 or more worth of work. You know, some of these rehabs needed carpet, paint, and, you know, green up the grass. I mean,
also,
it's a lot different.
Where we were fixing those fixer-uppers, only 20% of the world would rent or live there, where the homes that you're pretty much dealing with, 90% of the world would go there.
Right, exactly.
And that was a big difference. But so buying a trustee sale, I mean, that's a little bit, that's scary. You're sitting there with a cashier's check, and when you win it, you win it.
Yeah, I remember the nervousness probably for the first month. It took me a while to get, you know, over the fact that I might, you know, accidentally bid on something that was a second or something and throw away hundreds of thousands of dollars buying something I shouldn't have bought. It took a little bit of time to get the confidence that I really did have the right information, but I had the information, but when you have never done it before, it's a little scary. You're just kind of afraid of the unknown and not, you know, just a little unsure of yourself. So it was an interesting process for sure.
I had gone to trustee sales very few times, but the first one I ever went to, I bought in the Poly District, and it was a first at like 60%, and no one else came.
Hmm.
And it scared the heck out of me because I thought, okay, well, I don't get this. Why is nobody here? And then I got a call from Wells Fargo, and they had a second that they didn't protect. And they called and said, did you buy that? I said, yeah. He says, we messed up. So apparently everyone thought they were going to come protect. There was so much equity.
Right.
So I got completely lucky, but I thought, oh, this is really cool. So I'm all set. Do you remember the old like house that Steve and Amy lived in? For
sure.
A little while?
Right.
Okay. I think that was on 3rd Street. I bought the wrong house on my second trustee sale. I went to the units I thought I bought. I was all happy. And I said, yeah, I'm the new owner. And he said, John sold the property? And it just sounded like, oh, that was a warning label. And sure enough, the owner had changed the address on the property.
Oh,
and
that's dirty.
I bought the mess that, when I looked over there, it was like 1920. Grease was thrown out the window and gopped on the side. I thought, oh, man. Mm-hmm. So that is a problem sometimes. What was amazing to me is that you bought, what percentage of these probably never saw the inside?
Oh.
Like 90s.
90% or more never saw the inside.
Right.
Probably 95 to 96% never saw the inside.
I'm still to this day baffled at how accurate you can be on something you don't see.
Well, it makes it really easy on, the really clean ones, because after a while you kind of start seeing, what needs to be done. You kind of get a feel for the age of the home. You go, if it's 1970s, you're probably going to be dealing with a kitchen. So it's not that miraculous. It's just a lot of repetition and, making a few mistakes and going, that was my motto, never die the same way twice. So we made some big mistakes, but, we usually recovered from it and it wasn't too terrible, fortunately.
How many trustee sales over the years have you been involved in, do you think?
I'm pretty sure it exceeds 650 now in the last 7 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot. I mean, that is just a lot of volume to deal with, too.
Yeah.
So what was harder, running a track of new homes or dealing with probably, and at any one time, you had to have 40 houses almost always?
No doubt about it. The trustee sales by far was harder.
Okay.
Running a track of homes is a joke.
Okay.
I mean, compared to running trustee sale business, the stress and the, at the beginning, there were three different sale sites, and the three different sale sites had two or three different times a day that sales were being held. We had to coordinate having people go see the houses with arriving at the sale on time and having it appraised and having the title work done. It's quite a challenge. I remember someone telling me, what's the big deal? You show up at a trustee sale and you bid. Well,
a lot of preliminary work for 100 properties you don't buy.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The margins when we started, it always scared me. You said you're buying stuff at something at 80% of value and minus repairs, and I'm going, oh my gosh. And then it, consistently works where, okay, I guess that's a good deal. That's a good deal.
I remember when we first started, the formula was, I think, 83% minus repairs is what we were going with. And through time and through experience, I think your comfort level with me having success doing it and seeing how much was being made, I think we tightened it up to as much as 89% for certain inventory that we were very confident in the repairs and we were able to make a profit. So the margins can go down to what seems absurd levels just because of the volume and just the experience level that we had. Sometimes we weren't making any more than 3%, but 3% of $500,000 is not bad for a couple of months worth of work and probably literally a total amount of man hours devoted to it of, less than 30. I mean, if I had to be a good guess.
The competition also started to emerge. When you first started, the margins existed because there was only a few people, it seemed. And then all of a sudden, it grew. So what changed the popularity of trustee sales? Are the number of opportunities, or was the hedge fund world just emerging at that point?
Yeah, when the hedge funds came in, there were probably three or four very large hedge funds that came in, and they really messed things up. I mean, we were, typically buying at that time around 86% minus repairs, and when they came in, they would pay retail. So yes, it was quite a challenge because they had literally billions of dollars. They were buying almost everything. So during that 2-year period of time where the hedge funds came in and were buying like crazy, it became very challenging because you had to be prepared for absolutely everything to attempt to get anything. It was very tough.
What was different about their model? Because if they were in the resale business, they'd have lost money on a lot of properties.
Well, their model was buy anything at any price because they felt like it was on sale and they felt like it was going to work out in the long run. So, I mean, literally,
but they had a long run. But they kind of had a long run. In other words, were a lot of times they flipping them or were they holding them?
As far as I know, none of them were flipping them. The only thing that the hedge funds were doing was buying and holding.
So they were just collecting inventory and getting paid for buying it.
Yeah.
That's a tough competitor.
It is. I mean, literally, they were going after not only trustee sales, they were going after everything in the MLS. I mean, I remember seeing houses that we had just sold a year prior, seeing it be resold $100,000 more value within 1 year. And it was primarily because of the pressure that they put on the system. Almost everything was being bought cash at that time. If you weren't a cash buyer or a very high down conventional loan, if you were, you know, low down conventional or even FHA or VA, your offer was junk.
Online auctions, when did that kick in? How did that change the game as far as access to information?
Online auctions? You mean when we went to Florida?
Online, no. Well, trustee sales never got online in California.
Never got online in California. Okay. It was only in Florida.
Kind of got dominated by one particular company, though.
They probably took 50% of it. Auction.com took about 50% of the auctions. The rest of them were still being held at the courthouse. Fortunately, over time, Riverside County finally got smart, and they decided to put all of the auctions in one location finally. So it got progressively easier in some ways and progressively tougher as time went along.
Yeah, the easier it is, the more people participate and show up with their first pile of money. What percentage of the time were these properties occupied? And if you had your choice, would you rather it be a tenant occupied or a former owner?
In California, the percentage is probably 80% occupied at least. I don't think we got any more than 20% vacant. We found by far that the better person to have in there was the renter, which kind of surprised us. Interestingly enough, because I think they were renters, they didn't have a sense of ownership. You know, they didn't come to us and say, hey, I installed this tile. If you won't pay me for it, I'm going to take it with me.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, I had people saying stuff like that to us. So, renters by far.
What percentage were okay with taking cash for keys and just being done with it quickly?
I'd say pretty high percentage, 75 probably percent.
It seemed like that.
Were reasonable and would take the cash for keys and move on.
Okay. Yeah. And then we have those really bad examples where you really go, you're kidding. Honestly, you can play that many games and still stay in a property.
I learned a lot about fighting evictions. Yeah, I'd probably start a business if I could get a percentage of making landlords' lives. Of course, I'd probably be shot.
Yeah,
in short order.
Yeah, you just wonder, okay, how you dream up enough things to keep it going, because you just kind of go, well, because we've had crazy costs for some of that stuff.
It's just abuse of the law, is what it is.
Yeah, that's been a very frustrating part. How did you find the best way for you to diffuse the stress? Because that's part of it. You know, you have to at some point just go, I can't take this all.
Well, I got smart enough to hire some help that probably took some of the pieces off my plate. But stress was a very challenging thing to deal with in trustee sales. There was a lot of it.
Contractors, I mean, when you're dealing with 40 properties at the same time, you're not dealing with one contractor. You're dealing with a bunch of them, probably.
We were pretty good at doing the project management. You know, we did our best to arrange general contractors that handled a lot of the subs for us. So when we put out a contract, we would usually try to include everything within his contract, even though we might specify, okay, you're overseeing all of this, but we want you to use this sub for this and this sub for this.
Okay. So, I remember at one point you even were buying the materials and having it delivered in the garage, basically.
When we first started out, that's how we started out. We would buy the materials in bulk because we would prefer to do that than to give a general contractor money that we weren't sure that was going to be actually put towards our projects. So we were putting together the list of materials, bulk ordering it, and having it drop shipped to the garage, and that's how things would start. But it didn't take very long for the general contractors figured out that if they bought those materials themselves, they got an advantage on the bidding process because we weren't giving them the discount for the materials.
So. Okay. Well, Greg, thanks for joining us today. And we'll pick it up on the next segment.
All right.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.